Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hello, friends and family and other people that just stumbled on this podcast. It's another Degrads. Yes, it is. The Degrassi Rewatch Podcast with your hosts, Shane Warren Kipple, Gavin Spinner-Mason. And there's another one, too. Who are you, sir?
Mike LaBelle, a.k.a. Jay Hogart, at your service, sir. Yeah, why are we calling each other sir so much?
I don't mind it. It feels right.
I got it from Kevin Smith because he and Jason Mewes call each other sir all the time. I think I picked that up because I was fan.
But if you ever run up against someone who's like, no, sir is my father. It's like, no, I don't actually mean it like that. I'm saying it as a term of endearment, not a sign of respect. I don't really respect you. And then you get into like a whole bunch of other things. But today is a very heavy episode and it's a disgusting day in Toronto, so pathetic fallacy in full swing.
Today, before we get into the episode, I should actually say this is the first time Degrassi really does go there. I think this is a marked change in what Degrassi is willing to tackle. And I wanted to say just a quick note that this story does deal with sexual assault.
Yeah.
We're going to try to approach this with as much care as we can. But if, you know, that's something that's difficult for you to discuss with us, then feel free to take a break.
Yeah, we haven't needed to have a trigger warning yet, but this episode definitely does call for it.
That's right. And joining us here today to discuss Shout Part 1 is somebody that you are no stranger to. And needs no introduction. She's practically a co-host at this point. Melissa McIntyre is back with us. Hi, Melissa.
Hello, hello. You can call me sir, but definitely do not call me ma'am.
Thank you, sir.
We respect you, and we will not call you ma'am.
Thank you very much.
All right.
So this week we're talking about Shout. It's a two-part episode that even now it feels like a real turning point for Degrassi. And revisiting it now as adults, I feel like it lands a little bit differently. And we can sort of discuss what your sort of take on how the episode comes across in 2026. I'm sure it's there's a lot to be said about it, but we do care about getting it right. So
yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's obviously still so relevant. And looking at it with, you know, adult glasses, she's a kid. Like that piece of it is devastating. She's a kid that this happens to. And it was difficult to watch for sure. Mm.
It was hard to watch.
And Lauren performed so well in this episode, and my heart was breaking for her because she is the girl that always outwardly seems to have it all together, all the confidence in the world. And you could see very quickly when she got to this party that she was younger, she felt it, and there was no, that facade evaporated, and she was completely at the mercy of this guy that she found herself with in uncharted waters, and she was scared, and it was apparent in that moment that she was much more a kid than she thought she was. Without further ado, let's get into it. Season 2, Episode 7, Canadian air date was November 3rd, 2002, US air date July 11th, 2003. I wonder if that's a typo.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Writers were Aaron Martin with the story, Claire Ross Dunn also with the story, and Tassie Cameron with the teleplay. And director, I knew it. I remembered, and I also felt it. The great Phil Earnshaw.
Shout was a Tears for Fears song. I used to listen to this all the time when I was a teenager. I love this record. Came out in 1984. It's a synth pop anthem, and it's sort of focuses on political protest and social change. How I think it relates to this episode is pretty obvious. This might be one of the better related songs to a Degrassi episode that we've had so far. And it's about anger. It's about confusion. And I think it's more importantly, it's about instead of keeping something bottled up inside and just trying to convince yourself that it's fine, it's about the moment that everything breaks open and you speak out to tell the truth. So it's not just about yelling, but it's about finally saying what happened.
On its face, also the shout and the cry for help.
Yeah, of course.
We open on a soccer match. Spinner dribbles the ball.
Hey, Spinner.
Yay, it's me. Shout out to my buddy Vince, who you two also know, because this was actually, he was background in this episode.
I did see that.
20 years before he and I actually knew each other, he was in this episode, and he never misses a chance to talk about it. I thought I would mention him out of love, my boy. Spinner is moving down the pitch. Paige, in her cheerleader getup, watches from the sidelines, but she is not watching Spinner. She is transfixed on a hottie from the other team. Spinner scores. Panthers win, and Paige and the cute boy make eyes at each other.
This cute boy, Dean, is the character. We got to shout out Sean Roberts.
Woohoo!
Who is the actor who plays Dean. Seeing him playing in the game, my stomach was turning. I think it's because I know what is going to happen, but also I do get strange. I get vibed out by him. He's got real predator kind of attitude right from the jump.
And also, side note, Shane Kippel, this guy, was born without the sports gene in any way. I tried. Lord knows I tried. But I never made the cut once for any school team. And
so you got
in
to
this
pretend
episode,
on TV. That must have been
I had to
satisfying.
Pretend. And it was a controlled environment. But I have to tell you, I had to score. And they were letting me score, and I could not. But they had to have a shot of that ball going into the net, and Phil set it up that everything stopped, and I got like a penalty shot from about 10 feet out, and I still hooked it to the left. It was terrible, terrible. So I thought I would just
honestly, Shane, when I was watching it, I was thinking of you and telling that story and how bad you were at soccer. And it just it made me laugh. I was like, how many shots did it take to get that?
Just too many. The fact that I had to do it at all, much like me having to dance in front of people, which I couldn't take. Now I have to be the star player on any sport team. I'm like, no.
I love this.
Please.
Every episode is a real true challenge for you, Shane.
Anyway, roll the credits.
Roll credits.
We are walking back to the school, and Paige gawks some more at the boy. Hazel tells her that she shouldn't hold her breath about him for some reason. And that's when Spinner walks up and, you know, fully riding the wave of being the MVP of this game, he shoots his shot and asks Paige to hang out on Saturday night. And she tries to seem busy, but Spin is persistent, and Paige reluctantly agrees. As he runs off, Hazel pokes fun at Spin for being in love, but Paige insists that they are just friends.
Isn't this exactly just the two perspectives on this moment? Is the tragedy, the epitome of the tragedy of high school crushes?
Does that really ever change, though? Does the person that you feel a certain way about really feel that way about you?
It's very rare. Very rare. But I love seeing it from both sides here as they walk away, and Paige is basically saying like, yeah, I'm not, that's not happening. And then Spinner's like, I'm a chick magnet. I'm the king of the world. It's like so obviously just mismatched. Yeah. And I loved it.
Hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
In the locker room now, Spinner gloats over the soccer win and getting a date with Paige. Jimmy advises Spin on strategy to make sure that the date goes exactly the way that they hope that it will. And all of this just before Spinner gets a team shower game MVP style.
We actually had a question about that. Just for all of you listening, of course, we love hearing emails from you. You can email us at dgradspodcast@gmail.com. And we got one from Mo recently asking how many takes they had to do of everybody pouring water on you.
I want to say two, but for anyone in film, anyone involved either in front of the camera or behind the camera, everyone knows that if there is a scene where someone has to get wet, or muddy or dirty, they pray that it only has to happen once, because the reset just takes forever.
But also how many backups of the clothes? As actors, the wardrobe will specifically make a point to tell you, we only have two more of these clean versions of these clothes. So wink, wink, you better get it right. Take one or two.
Especially if it's a girl falling into a pool, but a guy as well, but a girl, you have to dry them off. You have to redo the makeup, redo the hair. So between takes, it could take, what, half an hour, depending on how elaborate the, more than that. Exactly.
Half an hour, Mel?
I feel like it'd be more than that. Like, I'm thinking back to Ashley throwing the chocolate milk at Paige. And that was I don't remember the length of reset, but that was a big reset.
How many takes did you have with that one? Do you remember?
It was only one or two, because the only time that I actually threw the chocolate milk at her was for her close up. Everything else was just to the side of her, and it was just cheating the camera. But
I see.
That makes sense.
Smart. Once again, little tricks.
Movie magic.
It looked great, though. It was fun. It was fun. Because I never got one of those in real life. It was nice to have it, set up on the show. Okay. Paige and Hazel watch Dean from Bardell load onto a bus, and Paige, under the direction of Hazel, shoots her shot before it's too late. And after some back and forth with a healthy dose of sexual tension, Dean invites Paige to a house party tomorrow night. And for those of you that don't live in Toronto, you would not know. He gave a real address.
I looked it up.
Yeah.
I looked it up online.
That was not like
a house there. Someone lives there.
Yeah. That's not like a phone number. Like, what's your number? 555 0123. Anyway, now we're at the lockers with Toby, and he opens his locker up to have a hoarder's dream of crap fall out into the hallway. JT walks up, and Toby hopes that the sight alone will get JT to vow to do better. But JT keeps it happy-go-lucky, as he always does, and Toby isn't having it.
He's dressed as the Panther mascot, by the by.
Yeah. Yep.
Of course he has that job.
Toby is not having it and threatens JT to clean it up or their friendship is over. Now, this is a B plot, obviously, but I also found it interesting that this might be the first time that a warning of something that could happen to a friendship, way back in the first episode when it was first established that students would be sharing lockers.
Yeah.
We heard nothing else about this until this episode 7 of the same season.
Yeah. They paid it off.
They did. There was a resolve. Emma was right. Now, Paige and Hazel are shopping for shoes for Dean's party specifically, and a text comes in from Spinner, who's trying to confirm his plans with Paige. Paige responds with her grandma is in the hospital and she has to bail. Quick cut to Spinner and Jimmy, who are in what I can only hope is a Blockbuster video. Maybe.
Oh my God.
It was. It totally was.
Where did you shoot this? That's not on set.
I'm trying to remember. It must have been at a Blockbuster because no, they didn't build a set for that. And if they did, they did a really good job
It's a huge, real detailed block. I thought for sure this was back when we would go on these field trips occasionally. You know, you might have a few days in an episode where you go out of the studio. Mm-hmm. It was always so fun.
I'm trying to recall from season one. I definitely did not go on location, and I bet the location budget was very small, but season two, we're out there a lot, and it was
how many streetcars we got in making cameos in these episodes, man.
Yeah, that's not stock footage at all. That's just the camera team planting there and waiting for the right shot and coming through with the right lighting. Yeah. So Spinner and Jimmy are in a Blockbuster. We're just going with that now, looking for the perfect movie for Spinner's early 2000s version of Netflix and Chill with Paige. And after, what would the Blockbuster equivalent of that be? So in Blockbuster and...
It would be Rewind and Watch. I don't know. It's dumb. That was dumb. Cut that.
I feel like you need to put VHS in there somewhere. Like, it's just,
VHS and Smooch.
Okay.
The S stands for Smooch.
Last time I opened up the floor for answers.
What, yours was so good?
After
one.
No, it wasn't. That's why I was asking you for help, and I got nothing. Crickets. After properly loaded up on romance movies and snacks, the text comes in from Paige, and Spinner is crushed, but doesn't suspect bad faith. Jimmy jumps to damage control. He has a plan of how their night can go well, but we do not know what this plan is yet. We soon will find out.
Yeah.
Are we enjoying this episode so far? It seems fun.
It seems fun and light, and everything is, it's a party and we're ramping up. We're excited. Again, it is really hard to watch knowing what's coming. And I was trying to put myself in the position of somebody who was just watching this for the first time. Be like, oh, nice. Cool. Yeah.
Light, innocent, just kids being kids and searching for love and, you know, barking up the wrong tree and
excitement and crushes. And
very light stuff.
Now, Paige and Hazel arrive at Dean's party, and he is there to greet them at the door.
I wanted to say, like, this entry from Paige and Hazel, the thing that I noticed, and I don't know if we would have noticed it the same back in the day, but, like, the camera tilt where it kind of sweeps up from their feet all the way up to what they're wearing, like how they're dressed. To show that what she's wearing is, like, is suggestive, almost subtly making a point that what she's wearing could be responsible for getting her into this situation.
Oof.
Right? So watching that now, how the camera is kind of participating in something that we would definitely question that now. Like, why are you slow panning up what this young girl is wearing to the party, right?
Yeah, I didn't catch that. I don't know. I felt it was more like, this is Paige kind of taking her moment to really just show up in a way that she wants to represent herself. Like, that's interesting.
It pays off in the end because Paige implies that how she was dressed makes her responsible, right? That no one's going to believe me because I got myself into this situation. But I do, I just think it reflects on the culture where the question back then was always, well, what were you wearing? Implying like, well, did you do anything? Did you have a part to play in this situation? Mm-hmm. Which is, we would never frame conversations like that now.
I don't know. I think we still do.
Agree.
Yeah, I think there's more talk about it now, but I don't think that anything's really changed that drastically in taking the onus off of women and survivors. I think that's still very much there. And women having to prove it versus believing.
In a court of law, that definitely comes into character assassination and putting mm-hmm. the onus on the victim of rape that hasn't changed.
There's also, and I mean, I haven't really researched this, but I do remember hearing something recently about laws they were trying to pass where you would have to report your assault within a certain time frame. Mm. And I think what we see in this episode is Paige goes through quite a lot of time processing what has happened to her. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine that, I mean, it's a TV show, so everything is sort of expedited, but I imagine the process to experience that in real life, how are you going to be able to bring yourself through that process to show up and to authorities, as we see in the end, at the end of the second episode, where she finally goes into the guidance office. I mean, that's a journey that she has to take to get there. So I can imagine putting a time limit on this. Like, yeah, we'll listen to you, but only for a certain amount of time. And then it's like,
it's absolutely insane. Like, so, I've been in Paige's shoes. I was about 15, 16, and I had that happen to me. And it's taken me this long to actually talk about it. So for it to put a time frame on something like that, like it completely shifts the way you see the world, the way you see yourself. And you know, it's to me, that is yet another tool to silence people from actually speaking up and speaking out. It's like, oh, you're only a victim if you say it within this certain time frame. It doesn't change what you've experienced and how it changes you as a person. So that's insane to me. A survivor is a survivor is a survivor. That's it.
I'm so sorry, Melissa.
Thank you.
Was it like an evolution of how you had to process the events from that day, from that night, or not wanting to accept it that this happened to you?
All of it. It for me and my experience, it didn't click that it was what it was until somebody else had said mm-hmm. something, and then it clicked. It was like, oh my God, that's what that was, and it completely, the ground was taken out from underneath me, and I didn't know how to process it. So I was like Paige, I was a kid. You don't know what to do. I didn't tell anyone. I just told my father this morning, actually.
My God.
Yeah.
Was it because you watched the episode?
Because I watched the episode, because I was like, I respected the way that the show handled it. And I was like, no, I think it's time for me to tell my truth as well. It's an incredible thing to find that power. But yeah, like it's taken me a very long time to not hide from the shame of it, and to really fully recognize what it was and how it shaped me. And I'm a strong person. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Like I fully believe that to my core. But yeah, it's taken me this long. So yeah.
Wow, Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for trusting us enough to, you know, to talk about that here, and especially, you know, knowing how many people this podcast goes out to. It's a very, you know, brave thing to do.
Thank
friend
you.
To friend, and yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point, right? It's the point of the show. Mm-hmm. It's the point of what you guys are doing with this podcast is honesty and connection. And I thank you for having a safe space where I can do that. And yeah, here we are.
Is this person, if I may ask, is this someone that you still run into from time to time? No.
No, this person I haven't seen in 25 years, and let's keep it that way. But
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I almost don't know what to say, but thank you for sharing that. That's I will say, I'm like happy for you I guess that you're going through, like, you're kind of maybe coming to the end of a process.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
metabolizing
it's
this.
Exactly what it feels like is just the final just release of it. And yeah, watching the episode and prepping to do this with you guys was really just like, it felt refreshing in a very strange way because the episode is so heavy and the subject matter is so heavy. But yeah, it was just like, okay, like, look at what she's experienced. Look at what you've experienced. Look at how she processes. And yeah, I think the show really did justice for Paige and really like it felt very real.
Mm-hmm. Her arc is interesting. And now forgive me for seeing the comparisons, but now that you mention it, and I consider you like one of the strongest people that I know.
Thank you.
You've always been so strong. You say, you speak your mind, you ask for what you deserve. Yeah. You just generally, you kick butt. So.
Thank you.
Watching this transformation for Paige at the end, especially the second part where she starts, and it's just so kind of beautifully fitting that like your character writes the material and then she, Paige, ends up owning it. There's a strength there. Like you see her find her voice in the end and this strength. And she kind of, you know, kind of reminded me of you at the end there, like kicking ass, you know what? This, I'm going to say it. His face.
And that's one of the things that, you know, there are so many things that felt very real. And that was like the only thing that didn't feel super real. But I think it was a gift from the writers to be like, this person, this young woman is getting her moment. She's getting her very public moment of turning the camera back around at somebody, you know, where like, more times than not, the person doesn't get that. So I appreciated so much that they're like, no, for anybody that's watching that didn't get that, here you go. This one's for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you one of the people that never got that?
Yeah.
That moment?
Yeah. Although I guess, you know what? Maybe I'm getting it now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Okay. Let's get, where were we? All right. Sorry.
They arrived at the party.
Yeah, they arrive at the party. That's right. So Paige and Hazel arrive. Dean's there to greet them. And he walks them in and very quickly gets drawn into another conversation, leaving Paige and Hazel to their own devices. They both worry that they might be overdressed and, in looking around, maybe they're a little too young for this crowd, but Paige decides to double down and moves in to mark her territory and make her intentions with Dean unmistakable. As he runs off to get Paige drinks, a girl, or as Paige sees it, her competition for Dean, warns her to slow her roll as she's too young for him. But Paige snaps back that this girl is jealous and the girl leaves.
First of all, this is Barbara Mamabolo.
Okay.
A friend of mine making a cameo. I was stunned to see my friend walk on screen and she tries to tip Paige off. She says he's a little old for you, but what she is saying underneath it is, girl, stay away from him because I have some information. I'm wondering how this kind of a conversation would happen now versus then. I guess I'm curious to know if like women are actually having these conversations more now directly, sort of saying like, hey, watch out for him because he's, you know, inappropriate. I've seen him be inappropriate before and I've heard things about him.
I mean, I would definitely like to think so. And to me, I read it as a warning as well, which is like, careful with that one. I think like women supporting women is bigger and better and badder than it's ever been. So I would imagine that like I thankfully haven't had those conversations, but I would definitely, if I knew somebody was troubled, I would 100% speak up.
So the girl leaves, Dean returns with the drinks and Paige instantly reacts to how strong it is, and at least how I registered it, that might have been the first time that she realized that she was getting in over her head a little bit. She had obviously never had a drink that strong, and it just showed once again her innocence in that moment. And it was very interesting to see, of all characters, Paige, which is almost certainly why they picked Paige for this storyline. The girl who outwardly has it all together, suddenly anything but. All right. Now we move to JT and Toby, and they are at JT's.
Knuckleheads.
Toby watches as JT plays mad scientist and combines a plethora of snack foods that should never be together. But right now they are together. What? Corn-flavored? No. Cheese-flavored corn snacks?
And marshmallows.
Yeah, marshmallows. If there was ever a moment where we were clearly lacking product placement, could not say Cheetos, brilliantly done. Now, while doing this, he somehow tries to venture into proving to Toby that he will not hurt their friendship with, you know, their locker woes. And Toby, both with what JT is saying and what JT has offered him, is not feeling this at all. It looked tasty to me. I would have taken a bite.
What's wrong with you, man?
You don't have the time, Mel. We don't have the time.
But man, yeah. I try not to be a judgmental person, but right now,
come on.
It's gnarly.
I think we've talked about this before at parties where, you know, people might be partaking in things that you're just looking for odd combinations of flavors, and it doesn't matter what it is as long as it's food. No?
Want to support you so badly, but I just like
I feel like we're getting Spinner more than Shane this podcast.
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it in this episode. I'm just saying I would have taken a bite. I'm not saying I would have taken two, but, you know.
That's the line. One bite, not two.
Okay. Now we are quickly back at the party, and Paige is getting closer to Dean. But unexpectedly, Spinner and Jimmy show up at the gate to the yard of the party. Hazel clocks this and immediately warns Paige that they should leave before they're caught in their lie. But instead, Paige asks Dean to take her somewhere more private because, as she says to Hazel, she's not leaving when she's this close. Dean happily leads her away.
Dean is really creepily locked into Paige this entire, where they're flirting over drinks and stuff. He does not blink.
He's using lines constantly.
The stuff about the eyes, I was just like, it made my palms sweat. I was like, ick.
But here's a question. Here's an honest question. If we did not know that, say we're watching this episode for the first time, and we're watching a guy hit on a girl at a party, and he's complimenting her eyes, and she's eating it up, do we see this as predatory, or is it only because we know?
Dean gives narcissist through and through. And that's like kudos to Sean Roberts, because he does it very well. But there's something that is just off, and you can sense it right from the get. And as soon as he starts getting into that like schmoozy kind of trying to win her over talk, it just like it's like alarm bells.
It like, comes off hollow.
Yeah.
You're right. Like he does this every weekend kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a little scripty.
Mm. Yeah.
He knows what works, and he also knows that she's younger. So she'll definitely eat this up.
Yep. And the way that Mike, you're saying he doesn't break eye contact, that's him watching how she's reacting to the things that he's saying. So he knows where the next step is. Like he's manipulating the hell out of her.
Good point. Good point. He leads her through the party and up to his friend's room, where things will be more quiet and more private. Everything to this point still is exhilarating and positive for Paige. She's not getting red flags, or at least she's not showing it yet. Now, in that room, he keeps the lights off, and he leads her to a very nice silhouetted shot in front of the window there, where they kiss for the first time.
Yeah.
And then they fall down onto the bed. He moves away from her lips. The shot is just on Lauren's face at this point. He moves away from her lips into her neck, and Paige asks him to take it slow, but nothing changes. So now clearly uncomfortable and a little bit irritated, Paige repeats herself more forcefully, but he still does not stop. And instead, he pulls back, reaches into his pocket, and pulls out a condom. Paige sees this and tries to get up, but he pushes her back down and continues, despite Paige's pleadings for him to stop. And as the camera moves off to the window and a view of the party below, Spinner at the center of it all, we fade out to Paige's hopeless attempts to get Dean to stop. All right.
Damn, this is, it's hard to watch.
Yep.
What I noticed was, I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting to be so unambiguously non-consensual. Because, and I think maybe this is because how we would treat something like this now we might frame it differently to address the concept of enthusiastic consent, where things might seem a little more gray, a little more murky, but this is definitively not consent. She is trying to stop him, telling him no multiple times, trying to get out of this situation, and he is just ignoring her.
I actually didn't remember it being that overt. I remember that she did say no, but I guess because it had been so many years, I completely forgot that it was over and over and over in pleadings. Yeah.
It's, again, obviously really, really difficult to watch because, yeah, she is like, there's no stopping protest and he just does not care. And I also, the window shot, that to me was really big because it was showing the level of isolation in that moment for her, where she's like, there's this whole crowd of people having a great time out here, and they're like, they're this close, and here you are in this moment with this terrible human being that just is doing, it's painful.
Yeah, they're so close, or yet they might as well be miles away at that point.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
If only the decisions went a little different, she would be down there maybe enjoying the party with someone who was safe for her, and then this is where she ended up. It was very sad.
Yeah, but we also have to be careful not to, like, blame Paige for her decision.
No. Not blaming her at all.
Those would be the thought processes that she would have, though, like, as somebody that's gone through it, like, what if I should have just, that's where a lot of that internal blame comes from, is like, and as women, a lot of that comes down to, like, we're told to just shoulder it. We're told to just, well, you should have just done this differently. And, you know, it comes back to, like, well, what were you wearing? It's that kind of mentality that, like, it perpetuates that, you know, we victim blame ourselves. Like, it's so wrong. It's so wrong, but it is reality. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the mindset for a lot of people, and myself included, for a very long time.
And we see that play out with Paige for the rest of this episode, as she goes through the evolution of trying to make sense of everything that happened. Okay, let's get there. So
yeah,
next scene, next day, Paige sits alone on the bleachers, reliving the moment in her head. And of all the lines that could be used at that point, what she's hearing is Dean calling her beautiful, which is also indicative of what you're talking about. She's not hearing herself say no. It's about all of the, you know, the ways that he used to manipulate her to get her to buy into it.
Yeah.
And the world is silent around her. Now she's by her locker, still in her own head, and Hazel snaps Paige back to reality. She's noticeably edgy, but she tries to cover it up. And then Terry runs up, hearing a rumor about Paige and Dean getting together. And Paige confirms it, and then starts to wear a little smile, as if in this moment she's realizing that it might be a good thing, if only for her friend's benefit and her reputation, to keep it light and
to pretend that this is what she wanted, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as the girls walk into class, Jimmy overhears that conversation. Now, we are in Simpson's class, and Simpson takes mercy on Paige, who has not completed her assignment. As he walks on, Hazel has a chance to get the tea from her friend. And after jokingly taunting Paige about being in love, Paige tells her that it's obviously one-sided because Dean has not called. And furthermore, they didn't just fool around, they went all the way. Paige seems most hurt by the fact that there's been no contact since over the actions of Dean that night. Now, we're at the lockers with Toby and JT, and Toby has implemented his own locker sharing system, a do not cross line. And all this while brandishing a pair of scissors in JT's direction as he explains the new rules of their setup here. But JT, I guess, irritated by the scissors in his face when Toby leaves and accidentally knocks the sleeve of his own folded sweater off the shelf to hang below the boundary, JT promptly uses those same scissors to cut the protruding sleeve off, and then follows it with a very smooth move and kicks that fabric sleeve across the hall into a garbage can. That's no easy feat. And he didn't even react triumphantly when he did that.
He's professional at revenge.
I guess so. That's years of hacky sacking paying off there, I think. He definitely seems like a hacky sacker too.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. That sounds like a diss for some reason. Total hacky sacker.
I tried that for a minute in high school when the hacky sack came in and everyone was like, yo, check this hacky sack out.
Whenever I hear hacky sack now, I just think of that Between Two Ferns blooper with Matthew McConaughey where Zach Galifianakis goes, when you and Woody Harrelson are on set together, are you sad that somewhere in the world there's a sack not being hackied? Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful. McConaughey loses it. It's great. Okay. Jimmy and Spinner exit the school on lunch. Spin is telling Jimmy about his next potential plans for a date with Paige. But Jimmy, having overheard the conversation with Paige, Hazel, and Terry, carefully tries to tell Spinner that it might be wise for him to move on. But clocking this suspicious change in support from Jimmy, Spinner pries, and Jimmy then lets Spinner know that he heard that Paige had lied about her grandmother being sick, and she was actually at the party that they ended up going to, and the reason that they did not see her at the party is because she was upstairs with Dean. Now, it's a heavy moment. Spinner is visibly upset.
We hold on Spinner like three full beats, just crushed.
I know. But
it's like
remembering the shooting of this scene, every time Dean was brought up, he was always Dean from Bardell. And I remember Aubrey and I could not get enough of how funny that Dean from Bardell. And then when Jimmy says to Spinner, he was upstairs with, she was upstairs with Dean from Bardell. He and I needed so many takes to keep that serious because we couldn't contain ourselves.
That sounds exactly like something you and Aubrey would fixate on and not be able to do a straight take. That's so you guys.
We did.
All I can hear is Rydell from Grease. Rydell. I can hear.
I do just want to say it strikes me in this moment, You know, I know what it's like to be Spinner in this situation, hearing, especially at this age where you may or may not, I was a virgin, let's just be honest, and mm-hmm. you're hearing about like the girl that you like really have a crush on or maybe even think you love because you're really young and you don't really know what that means yet. Puppy love, who's to judge? Mm-hmm. You know, to think that it may have been not such a great experience for the girl. And to sort of to think about that now in hindsight kind of breaks my heart. And I get it. Like Spinner doesn't really know what happened. He just thinks, oh man, like she went off and like she likes this other guy and she went to be with him. And like, that's hard to hear, but like, mm-hmm. You never know what the real story behind that situation is.
No, he didn't think past the fact that he just heard that the girl that he likes lied to him and hooked up with someone else at a party that he was also at, coincidentally. Yeah.
But like, how would he ever think to look past that? That's, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Especially for a teenage boy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think as a grown up, you kind of take that at face value and you immediately be like, okay, well, she really doesn't like me. You wouldn't necessarily mm-hmm. dive in further and see what actually happened.
Yeah. You're not there yet. You're fired up. Now we are in Quan's class and Hazel keeps pestering Paige for more details on her time with Dean. And Paige is now, I guess, after sitting with this for a little while, getting visibly upset and eventually has to tell Hazel that she will move seats if Hazel doesn't shut up. Spinner, hurt and angry, stares daggers at the back of Paige's head.
This is so tough to watch because it's clear Hazel just wants to be excited for her friend, but she's not meeting the moment. She doesn't really have that information. Paige is hiding it so well, but Paige has to do the double duty of trying to protect her friend's feelings and her own about what really happened in this situation. So it was like, it's a real yucky situation to observe.
Well, and to, you know, build on that, like Paige isn't even sure how she feels about it yet. She hasn't even really grasped what she's experienced. So she's got her friend that's excited for her. She's got this other, you know, guy that she has a friendship with that's, you know, wanting to figure out what happened, but she's like, she's not even processed yet. Right. So she's right now, like, there's just all this noise. And she's just like, just shut up and let me think, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we're in the hallway and Spinner walks past Paige, but then circles back around and picks this to be his moment to grill her. He starts off with asking about her sick grandmother, but as Paige continues to lie about that, Spin bears down and tells her that he knows about Dean and what happened, to which Paige responds that he does not know what happened because he was not in the room, so leave it alone. But as she turns to try to leave, he grabs her arm to stop her and spins her back around. Paige responds by telling Spinner not to touch her, to never touch her. And he snaps back with, "Why not? Everybody else does." She smacks him across the face and disappears into the bathroom, and a shocked and embarrassed Spinner walks off.
So this, to me, this felt like very indicative of where we were, like the kind of the mindset we were in this time period. Feels very early 2000s male culture, kind of like, you know, the American Pie movies, which had just come out, where sex is like the ultimate currency for young men. And so the way that they view girls around them are like conquests as prizes to be won. Not to say that like these guys are villains, but this is the, you know, we were all kind of swimming in the same water at this period of time. And I'm curious to know whether this is something that is, it's still the same, or whether there's an elevated conversation and understanding about like, or I guess like inclusion of like what women want or empathy in these situations.
I think there's definitely progress for sure. I think just Spinner's just, he's hurt. He's embarrassed because now it's sort of public that this person that he's put himself out there for has chosen someone else. In no way does that excuse what he's doing or what he says, because he chooses to, you know, use her own actions or what he thinks against her. And that's not okay. But I think he's human and he's not saying the right things, but he's reacting to just being hurt.
Yeah. And how about the slap? Was the slap
I was just
real?
About to say, so I know I've spoken.
It sounded and looked real.
It looked I know, good.
I know I've spoken about this in interviews before. Lauren and I were close friends at that point. She didn't want to slap me full out. And there were three takes, I believe, three or four. And I just felt like she was holding back and I didn't want her to do that. So I told her to just go full out. Don't worry about me. Just slap me. And she did.
I would have jumped at the chance to slap you.
That offer is still, that's always open.
Anytime.
For all of the years you've had unlimited. To endure me in one way or another, you can. It's,
you know, I feel so seen right now. You finally
wait,
get
wait,
it.
Wait, Shane, does that, do I also have the same privilege?
No, Mike. Oh. But yeah, so it was a real slap. It sounded real because it was real and it did sting. And that was the first time I was ever full out slapped by anyone. And I have to say, it's not something that I really aim to repeat.
Champion.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first time. How many times have you been slapped?
I knew you were going to say something like that.
How many times since?
Next scene at JT and Toby's locker, Toby finds his destroyed sweater. JT defends his actions, clipping the sleeve, and both start arguing that the other one does not respect their property or boundaries. And as it descends into a shoving match, Radich, as he always does, appears in the nick of time and breaks up the tussle from down the hall.
Knuckleheads.
Now we're in the bathroom and Hazel finds Paige sobbing in one of the bathroom stalls. And she tells Paige that she saw Spinner and agrees he was totally out of line. Now Paige starts to open up, saying that she wanted her first time to be beautiful and romantic, but it was anything but that. She then goes on to say that she brought it on herself, as everything she did that night was orchestrated to get Dean to want her. But now, after Hazel still isn't understanding why Paige is so upset, she tells Hazel that she didn't even want to go that far. She kept telling Dean no over and over and over. But Hazel, now getting it, says the words that it appears Paige knew but was desperately trying not to accept. If you said no, that's rape. And on Paige, fighting desperately not to have to accept this terrible reality.
Yeah, I really love that the show, I mean, first of all, Hazel's the MVP. I know she didn't quite understand what was going on with Paige in the beginning, but as soon as it clicks for her, she calls it exactly what it is. And kudos on the show for stating explicitly what happened to her, because I think we can talk vaguely about this or sexual assault. We can kind of, but to say that's rape, mm-hmm. that's what happened. To be able to use that word so specifically is really important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was it was powerful. It was a powerful line. And yeah, exactly what you're saying, Mike. Like there's no being around the bush. It's like, no, this is it.
And even Paige's reaction to crying in the mirror, but her first, the only thing that coherently that she let out there was no, like she just not wanting that to be true, or maybe actually denying it in that moment. It's hard to know if she knows it and she doesn't want to accept it, or if she really
knows.
Truly does not think. Yeah.
She knows. Yeah. Yeah, like everything leading up into that, between, you know, it happening in that moment, she's trying to kind of justify that action with like, oh, but if he calls me, then I know it's okay. She's reaching for that reason for it to not be the truth, but she knows. Mm-hmm. She knows.
Now, if she did get a call from Dean afterwards and he wanted to see her again, do we think that this all becomes justifiable in Paige's mind?
I don't think it becomes justifiable, but it's easier to put it aside and ignore the fact that it is the reality when you've got something else to kind of bridge that emotionally. Because it's a whole lot scarier to just really face it than to pretend like it's not there and keep yourself in a dangerous situation. And it's an unfortunate reality, but it's, again, it's one that I've experienced. And yeah, sometimes it's just easier to be like, okay, but if I just do this, then I don't have to worry about this other really big thing. Yeah. And I think that's exactly what she's doing.
So now we are with JT and Toby again by the lockers, and Radich urges them to try to find a way past this. And after he leaves, JT, in a show of goodwill, lets Toby cut the sleeve off of his own sweater that he is currently wearing.
So sweet.
And this, yeah, and this seems to do the trick. Friendship mended, even though the shirts are not.
My favorite part is that they immediately do like a little secret handshake snap.
It's kind of like the children where a sibling breaks another sibling's toy.
Yeah.
And the only way out of it is for another toy to be broken, and then everything
that happens. It's like gangland. It's like mafia.
Yeah,
like eye style. For an eye.
Wow. Now we are in our final scene. We're outside of Degrassi. Paige tries to escape talking more with Hazel about going to the doctor for an STD/STI test and a pregnancy check. But Paige is digging her heels in now. She's blaming herself for everything that happened that night, the way she dressed, the drinking, asking Dean to go upstairs with him. She doesn't want to hear Hazel's pleas. She's determined to get past this on her own terms. And on a defiant and tortured Paige, we freeze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Hazel just trying to be the best possible friend, and she is a very, very good friend to her.
Did you have a friend like that? That was
not really. No, like I said, I really didn't tell anybody. Obviously there are some people that know now, well, especially now, but there are some people that knew, but yeah, it was something that I kept to myself for a really, really long time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm okay, but like it just it took time and
I just as Shane was reading through this recap, I've just found myself becoming so angry for you and just enraged. And anyways, I don't know.
This is the point of the show is to go to these dark places sometimes and, you know, Paige's reality is my reality, is so many people's reality. Like I'm a drop in a bucket. You know what I mean? Like there's so many of us. And I think that's why what you guys are doing and is so important. And I felt like sharing it today was really important. If one person hears this and has, you know, the courage to speak their own truth because of it, that's huge.
What would you say now, maybe to somebody like that?
You're not alone. You're not alone. Don't be afraid to share your experience with the people that are close to you, because they will have your back. They will be on your side and they will support you. Don't be afraid to give them pain from your pain. As that was part of it for me too. I didn't want to hurt the people around me by them knowing what I experienced. But the reality is, you know, those that are close to me will always have my back, and sharing with them has given me a sense of freedom that is really empowering.
What an interesting moment here. If I could take a step back and look at this whole situation, that you, we all found ourselves on a show that helped so many people deal with moments like this. And now, so many years later, on the Rewatch podcast, one of our own cast members is now being helped by the very show that you were on. It's just a weird, full circle moment that I never thought would happen. And once again, Mel, like, thank you for being strong enough and brave enough, you know, with everything we do and joke around. I've told you before that you're one of the strongest women, strongest people that I knew. And this just speaks to that as well, to not just say this privately to us, but do it in a very public forum where you know that people are going to be talking about this afterwards, and you're probably going to be questioned about it by fans. So good on you.
Thanks.
Well done.
Melissa, you mentioned, you know, feeling like you need to protect other people from your burden.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to say, like, I think it might feel like that in the moment, but other people can take that weight. We can help shoulder that burden.
100%. And you know, that's kind of my point. What I'm saying is, like, I try not to live life with regret, but if I could do things a little bit differently, I wouldn't hold it to myself. I would reach out, because you're right. Like, it doesn't have to be your burden to bear alone, you know?
Yeah.
Could I ask you one more question? So if we're going by the timeline of the show and our ages at that point, you said this happened when we were 15, 16. Did this happen before the episode came out, or just after?
I was trying to remember it. I think it was just before.
Just before.
Because it was right in that timeline.
Filming of it, or just before the episode?
I think it was just before filming. Yeah. Yeah.
So you hadn't even fully come to terms with what happened while you were playing support for, while Ashley was playing support for Paige's character in this.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. But again, like, I didn't face the reality of it for a very, very long time. So I don't know that that felt incredibly challenging, because I was able to distance myself from my own experience. Now, would that be different? Hell yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. I think we do generally understand trauma a lot better now, and trauma responses, that they're complicated, they're not linear, they take time. It's not just like you get to some conclusion right away because it happened to you.
Yeah.
So there is an understanding now about that.
I feel like I feel like there's a lot more. I mean, just focus on, like, mental health. You know, Mike, you and I have been talking about therapy. Like, therapy has been one of the greatest things I've ever done. And I wish it was accessible to every person. Just even being able to talk about therapy, like, I, you know, 10 years ago, would I have opened my mouth about that? No, probably not.
It was totally stigmatized. Yeah.
Let's go on to some questions.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, well, as y'all know, we love getting questions from you. We had a comment in one of our emails, and you can always email your questions to dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We've been missing out on some of the email comments, and I agree with you, so we're going to fix that today. This is from Dawson's Creek Rocks. Rocks with an X.
Rest in peace, James Vanderbeek.
Yeah, rest in peace, James. They say, just some general information regarding Shout. In the North Georgia region, we have a program that comes in and talks to students about healthy relationships. They used to utilize the Shout episode to teach 8th graders about rape and consent.
Wow.
They now use the Zoe storyline, but still Degrassi. I think that's super neat.
Wow, that's amazing.
You're learning from our instruction manuals that we put in a time capsule and sent into space. Great. Okay. This one's from Mo. Another one from Mo. Mo had a bunch of questions about or comments about Shout. This one says, I'm always moved by the very deliberate camera and audio choices in the scene where Paige is assaulted. I think that the camera suddenly veering away from the violence and looking out the window echoes the dissociation that can take place while someone is being assaulted. That's hearing the audio of Paige fighting for her safety and possibly in her mind, and this is a good point, her life, because she doesn't know what's happening to her, while only seeing the party going on outside is infinitely scarier. In fact, it's hauntingly powerful.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
And it just goes, it just dovetails so well with what you were saying, Melissa, earlier about how the feeling of the party and all of these people just beyond the glass, not knowing what's happening feet away in some cases. Here's one from Mo as well, because I love these questions, Mo. Do you know if there was any pushback by the producers, network, etc., about talking so openly about this topic? I think it was very smart and important that the plot was written with Paige blaming herself and not fully realizing or being ready to realize that she had been assaulted, even with Hazel straight up telling her and using the actual word rape. It was brave of the writers to use the actual word and then to show how much pain it caused to her to realize she had actually been assaulted and didn't just have a bad first time, in quotes. And that really is something that we hear a lot about, is like, oh, a bad first time, is minimizing it and using that terminology. I was Paige's age at the time, and after the episode aired, me and all the girls I knew were talking about and discussing the lines between consent and assault for a very, very long time. In a pre-slut walk, pre-Me Too movement world, no one was having conversations about informed consent and how saying no after saying yes still means no. As always, Degrassi was ahead of its time. Thank you.
Wow.
I think this is why it's very important, Mike, that we get the writers on the show, because they're the only ones that would really know, aside from the producers, would know about any pushback, any challenges in the wording, in the storylines that they then tried to put through to the network and were running up against resistance, and how they were able to navigate that, whether the network felt it was too early or it was too on the nose and things had to become more metaphoric or symbolic instead of real in certain moments. So that's, you know, getting someone like Aaron Martin or Tassie Cameron.
I was actually curious about that as well when I was watching the episode, because it really, like you said, Mike, this is the first time it really goes there, and it's like, how much pushback did they get? Did they get any? Was it something that was like, holy shit, finally somebody's doing this? You know, like, it's such a big moment, and again, for that episode to be used in conversations with young people and in schools is incredible.
Yeah, and to see that conversations were just happening naturally among groups of girls who were Paige's age is very heartening to hear. Wow. Okay, well, Mel, I love you.
Love you.
Thank you so much for coming on the episode. Thanks for your candor, for your bravery.
Fond of you.
You're ruining my moment, Shane.
Sorry. Everything's just been so heavy, you know?
I know.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's a big episode.
And no, though. I know.
We'll lighten it up next time. But yeah, thank you so much.
No, not next time.
No, the time after next time.
Yeah.
That's right.
A few.
Thank you for your candor and just for just being, just the honesty and the bravery.
Thank you. Yep. I appreciate it.
And if there's anything we can do.
Yeah. You guys are doing it all, man. I love you guys very, very much. I appreciate it. And again, thank you for creating this safe space and a place for the conversations can continue. It's powerful.
Anytime.
Okay. Right. Well, Mike, how about you tell everyone where they can reach us, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are on Discord. You can find us, DGrads Alumni, and you can also watch these video versions of the podcast edited and ad-free on our Patreon, DGrads Alumni. And I will say this, for Shout Part 2, we've got another guest coming on. We've got somebody that we haven't heard from in a very long time, Deanna
Clinkew,
or as you probably better know her, Deanna Casaluce, who played Alex on Degrassi. Deanna has a practice now. She's a doctor and a therapist, psychologist, and she's coming on to help us wrap up Shout Part 2. So stay tuned for that. We're very excited.
We are very excited. Once again, we thank all of you who have been listening week after week. We're happy that you're along for the ride, and we will not disappoint you. Mel, once again, thank you for being here, and thank you for trusting us with everything that you shared. And we look forward to wrapping up Shout next week. And until then, this has been another Degrads podcast with Shane Kippel, Mike LoBel, and favored guest, Melissa McIntyre. We will see you all next week.
Toodles.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.